welcome back to the What the Fork Sunderland preview show as the lads look to halt 7 defeats in a row. Can we do it? God knows, we've got a million injuries and confidence is at a pretty low ebb with the fan base and with the players, so it's sure to be the type of nervy 90 minutes that we kind of all wish that had been left behind and hope that it had been. But, you know, that said, I suppose you take our position over QPRs at the moment, who are scrapping for every single point as they look to stave off relegation to the abyss of League One. But we are going to meet a different QPR to the one we met earlier in the season, as they are us. So I've roped in the excellent Clive from Love for Words to fill us in on what we can expect. You've got a bit of a cough, mate, you said, but how are you doing apart from that? You all right?
Yeah, we all came back from Leicester last week with Leicester flu, COVID, whatever it is. Maybe just the shock that we won. But yeah, feeling terrible, to be honest, but we'll crack on.
I went on. Well, I appreciate you coming on into the first instance, and I appreciate it even more now. There's tons to get stuck into, which people know what we're going to speak about. But let's start with the most recent result, which for QPR is probably a bit of a shame, really, because you've won 3 of the last 5. You're getting a battling draw against West Brom and then a pretty damaging 2-0 home defeat in Middlesbrough. How was the performance? Where did it go wrong?
Is this as going through the motions before we get to Mick Beale?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Yeah, it's a shame. We do struggle. We've got no squad depth, really. So we always struggle in 3-game weeks. I think we've won 2 out of 9 of our third game in a 3-game week this season. And if you extrapolate that back over the past couple of seasons, I think it's something daft like 4 in 25. We just don't have the squad depth to cope. You're relying on people like Steve Cook and Jake Clark-Salter with his injury history to sort of go 3 times in a week, Chris Willock with his hamstrings and things like that. So it often happens like that. And I guess if the week had gone the other way around and we lost at Leicester, drawn with West Brom and then beaten Middlesbrough, we'd all have been quite happy with that and fine and coming into this weekend in good mood, same amount of points. Big missed opportunity, really. We just didn't play well. It was a huge amount of energy, effort and emotion went into the West Brom game on the Wednesday. West Brom, really good team. You saw what they did to Huddersfield at the weekend. We absolutely battered them last Wednesday. I still don't know how we didn't get out with a win. There was the whole Stan Bowles thing. And on Saturday, it just looked like everybody was sort of hungover. It was poor and it was disappointing because it was another chance that we've missed to move up the table. And what is there, 9 games left now? So yeah, it was not my favourite day.
When you mentioned Jay Clark-Salter there, I proper had like PTSD myself. And we're going through a bad run of form. But yeah, I forgot he even existed. So there we are.
Well, so did we for 18 months, mate. He couldn't get fit when he got here. We'd bought him to replace Yoann Barbo, who'd made 100 consecutive starts for the club. So to start with, you're like, this is another brilliant bit of QPR business. But actually, touchwood, he's managed to get fit since Christmas. And I think him and Cook, I was looking at it earlier, I think they're the third best championship centre-half pairing for goals per game. But they've only played together 11 times. So that sort of tells you why we've been doing well lately and why we weren't doing well before. That and Gareth Ainsworth was the manager.
We will get on to him as well. You touched on that 2-2 draw, and I watched the game and it was a battling performance to pull it back, but you probably should have won. Mikey Johnson scores an absolute screamer. You've beat Leicester the week before that. You've won 3 in a row. You've sort of boosted that mood. Has the Middlesbrough result left the mood a bit? Not sour, but has it kind of like dampened the mood a bit, or has the kind of positive results and the reasons behind why you maybe lost at the weekend been put into context and things are still okay heading into the game on Saturday from a fan base perspective?
We've got five games. We know that we struggle in 3-game weeks, and we know that we put a lot into Leicester and West Brom and whatever. So I think people are almost willing to give Saturday a bit of a pass. We've got 5 games now. Got you guys, obviously. Birmingham at home. We go to Swansea away. We've got Sheff Wednesday at home. We've got Plymouth away. And they're quite nicely spaced out around the international break. 2 of those are around us. 3 of those are teams around us. And the other 2 sort of almost done for the season, look like they're on the beach. So big opportunity here. You know, no midweek games, Plymouth midweek at the end of that, but we've got a nicely spaced out, a lot of time on the training ground with this manager. So it's all gearing up for these five games are going to decide it, because we finish with Leeds at home and Coventry away, so you don't really want to be going into that needing anything if we can help it. I think the mood's still pretty good because we've played really well just lately. I think only Leeds have taken more points than us in the last 8 or 9 games. The manager, like, everybody loves the manager. He's just worked miracles with what he inherited. Still positive, but yeah, Saturday was a blow because I think a lot of people went into that expecting us to win the game, and that's happened a couple of times this season. Just when you think we're getting it, it falls off. They do something silly. Cifuentes won 3 games in a row in December, and we were like, here we go, this is brilliant, we're turning it round. And then we got beat at Sheff Wednesday with goals in like the 88th and 90th minute. Oh, for goodness sake. So it feels like we're ready to come out of it, and the manager's brilliant. We just keep falling over, and it wouldn't matter because, like, since Cifuentes has come in, I think we're 10th in the league if you look at the results since then. But if you only win 2 of your first 14 games, you're seeing this with Sheff Wednesday as well, it's a hell of an anchor that just weighs your whole season down. You basically have to run a playoff form for the rest of the season to get out of it. We're also in this weird season where every other fucker down there is winning every week. I've never, like, 39 points, which we've got now, would have been safety 2 years ago. God knows what it's going to take this season. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I think we're all just looking forward to it being over. These next 5 games are going to decide it. They're absolutely massive for us.
I normally ask this question towards the end, but there's so much other stuff I want to get into with manager chat. And I'm talking the current, the former, and the one before that, and our one before the one that's not in the dugout on Saturday. But I'm looking at the table here because, annoyingly, as a Sunderland fan, when you've lost 6 in a row, you start going, well, what's behind us? And my God, it's tight. You've got, for those who don't know, Sheff Wed 23rd, 38 points. Huddersfield, 38 points. Birmingham, 39 points. QPR, 39 points. Stoke, 41. Blackburn, 41. Plymouth, 41. And then Swansea and Millwall on 43. Any of those, realistically, can easily get relegated. But I remember when we used to be in relegation battles, which was frequent, in the Premier League, and the one team we wanted to play was an outperformed team that had no confidence, middle of the table, and Sunderland are that at the moment. Looking at the game on Saturday, and I don't think any Sunderland fan would be offended if you said, yeah, we're delighted we're playing you. How big is the game for QPR based on our form, where we are on the table, where you are on the table, and your form?
It's enormous, absolutely. Because, I mean, that list of things, the team you want to play, mid-table, out of form, no confidence, loads of injuries. But that was Middlesbrough. Like, Middlesbrough had won 2 out of 10, I think, coming in. Their season's basically done. And, you know, and they came and I looked at their centre midfield and centre backs and thought, this team should be doing a bit better. And they beat us pretty comfortably. It's absolutely massive. Like I said, there's 9 games left. And our last 2 are Leeds and Cov. Cov away, you know, they might need a win to get in the playoffs. And Cov are a really good team. They've schooled us every time we've played them, just lately. And obviously Leeds coming down to Loftus Road. Leeds, don't know if you've heard, absolutely massive. So they're going to be crawling all over Shepherd's Bush, aren't they? Or, you know, you don't need Leeds to need a result in that game. That's going to be horrendous. So it's all on the next 5, starting with Sunderland at the weekend, who, like you say, look absolutely prime. But, you know, it's QPR at the end of the day. We don't do what we're supposed to do. Who would have thought we were going to win at Leicester and lose to Middlesbrough last week? We're a perverse club and a perverse team, really. Yeah, it's massive. I don't really want to think about it, to be honest. The whole thing. Don't ask me for a score prediction because I'm not going to give you one. One of your fanzines has asked me for a score prediction. We're so unpredictable. In theory, it's the game you would want. But I'm a football supporter, right? So I look at Sunderland and think they've lost 6 in a row. Well, they won't lose 7. Because nobody loses 7. You know, I kind of wish you'd won 1-2. I'm sure you do as well. But it's just, the other thing you've got, I mean, by the time we finish this podcast, Birmingham will probably be above us. They're playing tonight against Middlesbrough, who no doubt, having looked slick and professional on Saturday, will just phone in a load of slop tonight. Birmingham have got 3 of our problem children from last year who we absolutely hated as well. So that just seems written in the stars that one of those little twats is going to start doing something for them. And then Huddersfield have got Rotherham on Saturday, which is now an absolute gimme. So Mate, it's horrible. It's horrible. I miss us being 16th every year. I'm just bored.
You touched on, we're going to get into managers because there's a lot of chat about, including your new man. But I've got to go back to the start of the season when we played each other. I'll make sort of no apologies for it, really. You were crap under Gareth Ainsworth when we played you. Yes, you were down 10 men, but it was like, wow, these are bad. These are going to go down, no problem at all. And everything you'd said on the preview show previously, I was like, yeah, that's probably going to happen. That's changed, obviously. But before we go into Cifuentes, with the benefit of hindsight and a few months to reflect on sort of the Gareth Ainsworth era, because I know he's well liked as a person because of his time as a player, how will the Ainsworth era be remembered at QPR, and why do you think it was the right time for it to come to an end when it did?
Well, he's massively, massively out of his depth. Rarely have I seen a manager so obviously out of his depth at the level, really. Football's, for better or worse, people listening to this may sort of hark back to good old days, and what, maybe that's true, but those days of just punting it long and trying to shit house your way through games. Yeah, football's not like that anymore. Whether you like it or not, you can't be that team anymore. You can't do what Wimbledon did in the 1980s. It's not the 1980s anymore. And he tried to turn us into Wickham Mark II, because it had obviously worked a little bit. Well, it worked pretty well for him at Wickham. It was sad that he never got any abuse. There was never any sort of calls for Ainsworth out, because he is well liked at the club. But some of the last games in that run, I think we lost six in a row before he went. Like, we lost 2-0 at West Brom. We didn't have a shot. We didn't have a corner. We had about 20% of the ball. You've taken 2 days off work, and you're standing there and you're watching, go, well, what is the plan here? Like, what's the best case scenario in this game? What, we get a corner after 89 minutes and win 1-0? Is that the plan? Because we're not getting out of it by doing that. My excuse for him was always, you've got to look at the inheritance, what he picked up at QPR from Beale and Critchley, the complete lack of FFP headroom to do anything about it. And that's all completely legitimate. But then you look at what Cifuentes has done with the same hand of cards. It's absolutely just night and day, because Cifuentes is a modern manager, but he's a grown-up. And Ainsworth, it pains me to say it, because I love him as a player, but it was the wrong appointment. The team and the squad was entirely unsuited to his methods. He had no FFP headroom to do anything about it. But also, the sport is just not like that anymore. I'm really interested to see what job he gets next. I would be surprised if it's north of League Two. And even some of the teams in League Two are doing smarter and more intelligent things than that. So it was a real shame. And they hoped that pulling the nostalgia lever would have more effect than it did, I guess. But it was just so bleak. I mean, Sunderland, Coventry, and Blackburn, all until very late in 2023, had won more games and scored more goals at Loftus Road than QPR. So we get done 3-0 and 3-1 by Cov, 3-0 and 3-1 by Sunderland, and 3-1 and 4-0 by Blackburn. We got to the end of last year nearly with one home win, and we'd only scored about five goals. So there were three teams in the Championship with a better record at Loftus Road than we had, including Sunderland. So, yeah, it was bleak. It will just be remembered as bleak.
Yeah, it felt like that from the minute he brought in that guy to do the hacker. I was like, oh no, oh no. But he's gone. And I think from the outside looking in, as have Sheffield Wednesday, to be fair, he's really injected that sort of spirit and identity and results ultimately, which have made QPR go from looking like certain relegation favourites to a team that, at the moment, if the season ends today, you stay up. What is it he's changed? Why has Cifuentes sort of saved QPR in the interim, and why is the future as positive as it looks under him?
He's changed. Well, he's changed absolutely everything. We're just a completely different side, in just absolutely everything we do, apart from we do still concede from every set piece, which is a drawback. Basically, opposition corners are like opposition penalties. So he hasn't managed to correct that quite yet. Although that is a problem that even predates Gareth Ainsworth. It's just been a weird thing since Mark Warburton was in charge. He's changed everything. It just, like I say, he's a grown up. He's tactically smart. We play good, attractive football on the deck, but not sort of Russell Martin's death by 500,000 passes. You know, it's with a purpose. It goes forward. He gets our best players on the ball in their best areas. You know, Chair's just so much better under him than he was under Ainsworth. Willock, who wasn't even getting in the team under Ainsworth, he's back in and playing well. He's getting the best out of the squad. I just love him. I think we've potentially got a sort of special manager here that will go on and do great things, either with us or with somebody else. The torture at the moment is you just think if we can somehow get out this self-inflicted catastrophe of a season and give him a summer, a pre-season, we've got loads more FFP headroom this summer if we stay up. What he could do going into next season is really, really exciting. And QPR have missed the boat like that before. We got relegated out of the Premier League in 1996, just as the TV money exploded. We then got relegated out of the Premier League again, sort of 10 years ago, just as the international television money exploded. You know, these teams have left us behind. Other teams have gone past us. Brentford, bloody Luton going past us. We always miss the boat, and it feels like the boat's leaving here. Like, if we could just stay in the Championship this year, more FFP headroom, new TV deal, and this amazing manager that it's really bright for next season, but we're probably going to have to find at least 4 wins from these 9 games. And he has, you know, he is working with what he inherited, which is a team that doesn't score goals. I think there's only 3 or 4 teams that have scored fewer than us. We've only scored more than 2 in a game once all season. And it's a team with somebody's dad in goal. You know, the goalkeeper's an absolute liability. So you don't score goals and your goalkeeper's a liability. That's not a good combination. But again, it shows what good manager we've got. We are making a fist of this with essentially the division's worst strike force and its worst goalkeeper.
When you look at the appointment, it's funny because you can see that he's done really well. And like going into this, I knew for a fact you're going to feel really positive about him because you can see what he's changed to QPR from what was a really dire looking situation for QPR, to be fair. But I feel like in a way, Danny Rowell seems to have got more sort of attention, and that he's the one that's like going to keep Chef Wed up and all that kind of stuff. Is that a benefit to QPR though? Because, you know, if you like in the summer and you're at Sunderland, for example, you're looking for a new manager, Danny Rowell's going to be the one that might be the one that gets more attention. That means that if you stay up, Sif Winters is not going to be poached. Is that a benefit that he hasn't had as much attention as maybe someone like Danny Rowell has had?
Maybe. I mean, let's see how it ends up and who stays up. I mean, if Chef Wednesday stay up and we don't, or vice versa, then that attention will probably shift. I think, to be fair, you can't knock what Danny Rowell has done at Chef Wednesday. I didn't think they would win a game. You know, they've got a much, much worse team than us, and their owner's an absolute head case. You know, our owners are stupid, but they're benevolent. They're pretty good owners. They pay for their mistakes, and you can't knock that from them. Their owner's an absolute madman, just absolutely torching the club. So, and Sif Fuentes, we were 8 points adrift when he took over, and I'm talking about him being a miracle worker. God knows how far adrift Sheffield Wednesday are. It must have been 12, 14 points or something. So absolutely fair play to him. I think they've both been equally great. I'd be surprised if loads of clubs aren't looking at both of them, because to me, QPR and Chef Wednesday looked absolutely dead in October, November time. So we'll see how it turns out, but there'll be clubs looking at both.
We should probably talk about the best coach that Christian Speakman has ever seen next, a man we have a lot in common. Over we've discussed him previously. Oh,
the best man. Coach Mick Beale's ever seen as well.
Yeah, well, so says his Twitter account. largely hated to keep the offer as lack of integrity, and understandably so. A huge sort of red flag for me when he was being appointed at Sunderland was what he did at QPR. Disliked the Sunderland despite only being here for 2 weeks or whatever it was. But we sort of chatted prior on the previous podcast about, you know, going from Beale to Ainsworth. And then we've chatted sort of off air via message about sort of Beale when he came to Sunderland. He's gone now. I suppose he doesn't really matter, but what a missed opportunity it would be if we didn't have a good 5 minutes to batter him in some ways. there's 3 questions here, I suppose, that I'll just fire all at you at once, because let's go for it. How surprised were you Sunderland appointed him? What did you make of all the things that went on? And I mean, the press conferences, the fact you said he didn't work in London for 10 years, despite the fact you're at QPR, the comment that we hated him because he was a Cockney. And lastly, me bizarrely uncovering his burner account, which is just the most mad part of it all, really.
That wasn't even the weirdest bit, that burner account. I think, I mean, every time I mention McBeal, I get anonymous emails. So, yeah. I don't know where it's... Think one of my mates, and he runs a PR company, but don't hold that against him. When McBeal got the Sunderland job, he tweeted, "The thing that McBeal should do at the first possible opportunity is in an interview go fairly hot and heavy on an apology about what happened at QPR. Not for QPR's benefit, because really we're insignificant and nobody cares about QPR. But people saw what happened at QPR and they didn't like it. So you've got to address it, because it will just hang around with him forever. At the moment, he's now going for jobs as the guy that was third in a two-horse race in Scotland, and that guy that talked about loyalty and integrity at QPR and then walked out on them. That's what you're known as. So it was... I thought it would work at Sunderland because the theory of McBeal being this super youth coach, "You've never seen a coach like it," said McBeal. "The brains behind Steven Gerrard," said McBeal. "Futsal Mick," you know. Sunderland, you take the recruitment off him because he bollocks that up at QPR and Rangers. You give him a squad of young players, Europe, Premier League academies, which I know it's gone to shit at Sunderland this year, but that's the theory, right? That's what you've been doing with your recruitment. You just give him them to coach, and he's going to be brilliant, because that's the theory of McBeal. So I did think it might actually go all right at Sunderland. But you're coming into a situation where Tony Mowbray, whether you thought he should have been sacked or not, and it seemed to me that your support was reasonably still split on that. Tony Mowbray is a really likable fella. So, you know, you're coming into that, and you're coming into a team that was in the playoff semi-finals last year and has a big support base, has a great stadium, has a brilliant training ground. So there is a level of expectation around Sunderland, which there just isn't at QPR anymore. So expectation, previous manager was quite light, people aren't sure if he should have been sacked. That's two big red flags. You're then coming in as a really dislikable bloke with all of this baggage. So you're behind already. You're behind on aggregate. It's like you're coming into a cup tie sort of at least two goals behind here. I get that you're never going to turn the Sunderland job down if you get offered it. What would have been a better job for him is somewhere like Charlton. And look, the Charlton job comes up every 2 weeks, so he probably would have got it if he'd waited, because everyone else has had it. But that's a club with low expectations, and it's low where it is now, but there's potential there to build. And he could have gone to Charlton very quietly and, you know, within the next 18 months, got Charlton up out of League One into the Championship, and his reputation is rebuilt. And then, who knows, maybe Wolves come calling for you again, you know, having never met you, not interviewed you, and definitely not spoken to the agent you don't have. So, like, maybe... I just, going into a club where the previous manager was well-liked and then telling people, "You don't like me because I'm a Cockney, I haven't worked in London for 10 years. You know, his ability to open his mouth and say things that just aren't true really, really counts against him. It's like, look at the polling for the general election, guys. Like, people don't like that. If you just literally say black is white and the other, people don't like it. Saying, "I haven't worked in London for 10 years. People saw you with a QPR manager, Mick. It was on the television. You can't keep coming out and saying, "I won't be signing any 30-plus centre-backs at QPR to hold Rob Dickey's hand," and then 2 weeks later signing Leon Balogun.
Yeah.
You can't be saying, "I won't sign four loan players for QPR," and then, because they'll give up halfway through, and then you sign four loan players and they give up halfway through. People see this and notice it. He needs I don't know who his agent is. He says he doesn't have one. He needs a good, like, PR company to sort of get hold of him and say, this is how you rebuild your image from here. Because he might be a good coach, or that might just be chat. I'm really interested to see where he goes next and how he does. I'm really interested to know how much of all this chat about what a great coach he is and how well he did at Rangers for Steven Gerrard and whatever, how much of that is genuine and how much of that is just him being a really, really good self-promoter. When he was at Rangers, he did blogs, he did social media, he did every podcast, he wrote books. And it kind of created this image of Mick Beale, the super coach. But how much of that is actually real? He sort of fascinates me. Now he's sort of out of my life. He sort of fascinates me a little bit. I'm interested to know how much of it is genuine and how much he just is an absolute bullshitter. I know what I think.
Same.
I mean, if there were ever two clubs to be taken in by an absolute bullshitter, then it would be QPR and Sunderland. Right?
I find with Beale, like, you might be able to tell me whether this was the case or not, but it's funny you talked about the stuff he said that, or we heard he was the brains behind. I've never seen Steven Gerrard or Gary McAllister wish him luck in any job he's had, be it Rangers or Sunderland. I can't quite remember if he wished him luck at QPR, but it feels like from the outside looking in, the people that he was the brains of the operation, the people he worked alongside, have never really wished him well. And I'm not saying that you have to do that every time, but it speaks to me that it might be, for want of a better word, as you said, bullshit. Because what evidence is there that this man's a coach? Because I watched a lot of his team at Rangers because of my location, and I watched 12 games that he played at Sunderland, and I couldn't make head nor tail of either of team's identity. I don't know if at QPR it felt the same, but I don't feel there's an identity there that he understands or has a style of play. And I don't know, it continues to baffle me. And I think that the burner account, which is funny in many ways, but when you see how long it's been going, it does sometimes make you wonder if a lot of the Michael Beale was the brains behind Rangers title win was actually just player underscore ID telling everyone that he was the brains behind Rangers title win. But yeah, now that he's out of my life as well, he's an interesting character. And I don't think I'll come across, I don't know if you agree with this, anyone like him in football ever at any point in my life. He's just very, very bizarre.
It's certainly the strangest. We always get the first interview with the manager in the summer, and it was one of the stranger ones of those that I've done. And look, I've met Steve McLaren, who is one of the strangest people in the entire world. Let's have that straight.
Yeah.
I also think I was in a meeting with Mick Beale where he started basically sort of telling the room that he'd regretted taking the QPR job, that the situation was way worse than he thought, than he'd been told, and that there was a £10 million shortfall in FFP. That turned out to be true. But I was sitting there in this meeting going, why is he telling me this? Like, this is not what the manager should be saying in a meeting like this. Why is he doing this? And again, it comes back to that idea of self-promotion. On the point about nobody wishing him well, I hadn't noticed that. To be fair, when he got the QPR job, Steven Gerrard did loan him Tim Iribunim, who apparently Aston Villa rate quite highly. He's played a couple of games recently for Aston Villa. So I guess if you thought he was completely full of shit, you wouldn't loan him a player. That counts in his favour. And let's also say that to get to the point where you're getting the QPR manager job, the Glasgow Rangers manager job, the Sunderland manager's job, from a position of you didn't really have a playing career in football. You have no sort of traditional football background. That must take incredible sort of hard work, dedication, and sacrifice to get yourself to that point, and no little amount of confidence and self-promotion, right? So to a certain extent, he's got to do that, and maybe he just can't switch it off. No, it makes him just such a dislikable character. I don't really know what to make of him. I'm surprised it went as badly as it did at Sunderland, to be honest. I thought he might do all right there, and I'm interested to see what job he gets next. I'd like to say I don't dedicate too much thought to it, but I actually do. He's sort of He's a fascinating character to me. Apparently his interview that he gives, and the reason he gets, apparently in interview, he's unreal. Just absolutely unreal. This is why we keep talking about the famous PowerPoint presentation. I don't know actually if he has a PowerPoint presentation, but The people who were running QPR at the time told me that his interview just blew everything else out of the water. And a manager who was in for the job at the time, who may subsequently have become the QPR manager, said to a friend of mine, once he'd heard Mick Beale was in for it, he knew he wasn't getting it. Because once Mick Beale gets you in the room, it's his. You're his. Once he gets you in the room, apparently his interview is just absolutely off the scale brilliant. And look, he took, you know, he says he never met Wolves and never interviewed Wolves, which is obviously bullshit. Met them twice. He talked himself after, what, 15 championship games as a manager at QPR, he talked himself into the Wolves job and then turned it down, basically because he knew the Rangers job was coming up. But that's insane. Someone that's only been a manager for 15 games is turning Wolves down because he knows Rangers are coming from him. So he's got the chat, but looking at the substance of what he's done, is there any substance behind the chat or is he just a bullshit?
I'm going to go with the latter, but yeah, now that I think about it, there is some weird impressiveness that's come from him.
Just to finish, there is a little bit of me that feels sorry for him because, like I said, to work yourself up from doing futsal coaching in a church hall in Bromley to being the QPR manager, the Sunderland manager, the Rangers manager, that is insane. And you must have had to work so hard and sacrifice so much. And you've basically blown it in 18 months by being a twat. So I was just like, you don't want to feel sorry for him because, mate, it's on you. You said those things. You said I haven't been to London for 10 years. I don't even know where London is. And look at all of that. But at the same time, I do feel a little bit for him because it must have all that hard work. I don't know. You could write a book. Maybe I should.
Yeah, no, I'd read it. I think the interesting thing with him as well is how he sometimes changes from Michael to Mick, and I can't quite understand the science behind it. Sometimes he's Mick.
We had a little bet or whatever you want to call it in the Crown and Scepter when the Millwall job came up. We're like, he'll go for that, and he'll start turning up in a flat hat and asking people to call him Mickey. He'll suddenly be Mickey Beale, the Millwall manager. So it's absolutely, I mean, it might still happen. Neil Harrison can blast there, is it? So watch out for Mickey Beale, the Millwall manager in the Peaky Blinders hat.
Fair play to him, I suppose, in some ways, but also, no. So a final question. I normally ask for predictions. I think we're going to get beat, so I'll just lay that one out there. Sorry, Sunderland fans, that's just what I think. That's the way I feel at the minute. The final question I wanted to ask is probably something that I've been most interested to find out outside of the penal stuff when speaking to you. How does Sunderland look from the outside looking in at the minute? Because we've just discussed the whole Beale thing, which you've got a bit more knowledge of because of him being at QPR. But like at Sunderland, it feels crisis-y, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel right at the moment. It feels apathetic. There's people not wanting to go to the games. And 4 months ago, 5 months ago, it was nothing like that. It was the best the past 18 months prior to that felt like some of the best times I've supported Sunderland in ages, with great football players that I was falling in love with. And it's just gone so drastically wrong. I'm curious as to how it looks on the outside. Because I think some people just go, oh, the 10th, don't worry about it. Don't be daft or 11th or whatever. They're demanding. But like without blowing smoke up your backside, I think you've got a bit more thought process behind that. How does it look from the outside looking in?
Yeah, maybe it's because of the position that we're in and also our club's ability to create crisis out of nothing. You know, you get to Friday afternoon and I'm writing the match preview and it's absolutely fine. And then a story drops that Ilias Chair's going to prison. You're like, okay, brilliant. That's the rest of my day. QPR are just sort of the triumphant return of Ilias Chair's kayaking winker. Brilliant. Okay, that's the rest of my day done. Radio London on the phone and all this. Perhaps, you know, being in danger of relegation makes me, it strikes me, and I really, like, I don't want my Twitter to be absolutely deluged by Sunderland fans, but it feels like a little bit of an overreaction. You feel like you've sort of been moving in the right direction, that you came up with a good team. You were very, very unlucky that your manager decided to walk away and join Stoke. That's not on you, and it's been a disaster for him at Stoke. You know, you got Tony Mowbray in as a bit of a filler. He got you to the playoffs. That felt like a bit of an overreach at the time, bearing in mind that Mowbray had been brought in as a, oh my God, Alex Neil's left, what do we need? We need a sort of steadying influence. You had an amazing loan player on loan from Man United last year that probably elevated you a little bit further than you should. And Jack Clark's one of the best players in the league. He's now injured. There was a story last summer that you were thinking of replacing Mowbray last summer, and everybody went, "Oh, what a terrible idea! What, how disrespectful and whatever." And honestly, if you'd wanted, if you were minded to do it, which you obviously were, because you did, then you probably should have done it then and given a new guy a season. But you've had this weird season where Tony Mowbray's gone, Mick Beale was a disaster, but you're still, like you say, you're still 10th. You're not getting relegated. Build again in the summer. It's a good young squad. I like your recruitment. There's obviously been some weird stuff off the pitch. Like, you look sort of weirdly badly run off the pitch. Like, you can only buy tickets if you ring the box office between 1:30 and 2:15 on a Tuesday afternoon, and a man will ask you 3 questions and you have to, you know, get them all right to buy tickets. So it seems sort of haphazardly run, and the whole Newcastle thing was just hands over face.
Oh, man.
What on earth are they doing? Like, honestly, if QPR had done that for an FA Cup tie down here with Chelsea, people would have been fired. Like, you wouldn't have got away with that at QPR. That was just, what are they doing? But yeah, look, you got promoted. You got in the playoffs probably a little bit ahead of schedule with a good loan and a good run. You've consolidated in mid-table. I don't think you're under any FFP pressure. You can go into next season, appoint a fresh manager for the whole summer. You've got a lot of injuries at the minute. But every team that's in the middle of the championship that isn't going up or down basically gets on the Mykonos Highway at this time of year, don't they? Look at Watford. They've done exactly... they're just all checked out. So there's been some weird and some bad decisions made. And I wouldn't have sacked Mowbray when you did. Certainly wouldn't have done what was done around the Newcastle thing. And you guys would know better than me. But it doesn't look like an absolute disaster to me. Certainly... compared to when we were playing you a few years ago and Jason Steele was wandering around 50 yards outside the box trying to catch the ball. And, you know, like, compared to that, this feels like a club that's still got potential next season, a good, you know, young team. You've got players at Sunderland that I would absolutely love at QPR. And I just, yeah, a little bit of an overreaction. We've actually been looking at the Sunderland message board a lot this year because of the Mick Beale stuff. How are they doing up there? And, you know, our message board is pretty busy. But on the day when it was like, oh, Mick Beale might be getting sacked, there was a 74-page thread that had been started like 5 hours before. And it's like, this place, you've got such a big support base. It's like a cauldron and whatever. I guess it just sort of amplifies everything that's going on, and everything either feels a lot better than it is or a lot worse than it is. You know, some of them have not had a terrific season. I thought you would push for the playoffs again, and you haven't, but top half of the league. Loads of other teams have got themselves into the shit this year. I really don't think it's that bad, guys, honestly.
I'm slightly more positive now, but I'll let you know if that's continued come Saturday. But Clive, honestly, always a pleasure to have you on, because I think your thought process is great and your stuff that you write is hilariously funny, and people can find it. I'll put that link in there. But thanks for joining me, mate.
Appreciate that a lot, mate. And yeah, if you could just roll over and let us win on Saturday, and then we can chat again next season, that would be great. I'm going to be looking for bloody opposition input from Barrow and Stockport next.